Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too.
Allegedly,
yeah. And shake them ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. And Chris, I went on an adventure yesterday, and I may never ever go to a grocery store again. I went to a restaurant supply warehouse.
Oh yeah, those are cool.
An actual one where you can only get in if you're a manager of a restaurant, or they'll give you a day pass to go in there, and they don't have shopping carts. You are in there with a wheelie cart type of thing. The booze is cheap. The meat is cheap. Everything's cheap. And it's in such great portions. It is. I was looking at this and going, what do I need this whole side of beef for? And yet I almost bought one, but it's one of those things where it's like, I have a giant salami, like almost like a deli-sized salami that I bought just for snacking. I'm like, why would I ever go to a grocery store ever again? It was amazeballs, and I almost wish I had a second freezer at this point.
There you go. I need to need to get back into cooking down at regular elevation. I will be cooking tomorrow because I'll be on the mountaintop tomorrow.
How does higher elevation affect like a crock pot or something? Does it take longer because the air is thinner?
It would theoretically, but because I use the pressure cooker setting, it doesn't.
Yeah. Well, the pressure cooker would. I mean, that's like being on the inside of an airplane. It's just gonna really.
Right. Right. No. So that's actually why the Instapot for the mountaintop is a lovely thing. So you get like huge portions. It's savory, which is good when you're working, you know, when you're working on top of the mountain or whatever. And then, you know, I will have, you know, plenty to eat on. We'll be up there. I'll be up there starting Friday at noon and then all the way through Saturday afternoon. I should be getting back from the mountain around 2 or 3 p.m.
All I know is I could get a giant bottle of Buffalo Trace for like $30. In stores it's like 70. I'm like, I'm never buying anything at a store ever again.
I'm now, what I want you to think about, which is a weird thing for me to be pitching to you as I'm approaching 49 days of sobriety, Think about how drunk you would be on top of a mountain drinking that Buffalo Trace. You'd be such a cheap date. I won't ever know,
I've been drinking in Denver.
Smoking hits pretty good up there, too.
Oh, I've been drinking in Denver before. Went the same weekend as the Great American Beer Fest, but there was also an improv festival there that weekend. Oh, yeah, the thin air. I'll have one drink, and then I'll be done for the night. Thank you very much.
But now, the mountaintop would be double the elevation.
That's true.
10,000. Yeah, it's 10,000 feet, so it really hits you.
You could get in shape quick up there, Chris. You know, you could.
I'm gonna be pushing some snow. Don't worry, buddy. I'm getting a workout. That is my new sort of work plan and workout plan consists of being on top of a mountain one day a week and pushing snow, because I'll be doing it this week. I'll be doing it next week at least. And then we'll see when they need me again. But, you know, especially since I cook food, I'm a popular guy to have as your secondary on top of the mountain. I'm easy to get along with, and I cook a good meal.
Well, we've been down this road before, Chris.
Oh, no, we're breaking up again?
Again? During SmackDown on Friday night, at least the East Coast feed, Vince McMahon officially stepped down from TKO, company that bought up WWE and also owns the UFC. McMahon releasing a statement, quote, out of respect for the WWE universe, the extraordinary TKO business and its board members and shareholders, partners and constituents, and all of the employees and superstars who helped make WWE into the global leader it is today, I have decided to resign from my executive chairmanship and the TKO board of directors effective immediately, McMahon said. Nick Khan, in a email to employees, he will no longer have a role with TKO Group Holdings or WWE. Jeff Hawkins says, for the time being, he came back before. He'll be, I don't know if he survives this one, but God help us. Yeah, that filing did some damage to the stock, did some damage to the board, did some damage, and they all knew this coming in, that this was a possibility. But Vince McMahon, get the hell out. Chris, your thoughts?
Well, I would like to begin by saying you're welcome, Vince, on behalf of the WWE universe. I think it's kind of beautiful that he put us first in his statement. And however this shakes out, it'll always be something I'll remember about him, of course. Other than that, he needed to go, obviously. I don't think he survives this one, Jeff. I really don't. I don't think
he survives it, but I think he gets out better than you think, and I'll tell you why in a moment.
I think he might get out better than you think on this one, but then there's just this open question of what are these other cases?
Yeah, if there are other cases.
Well, there's got to. Well, we know there's other hush money payments.
Yes, there's other hush money payments, but I don't know if they'll be. You know, if yeah. The thing they need, though, to me is to declare the NDA is invalid, and then the cases will come. If they don't declare the NDA invalid, you're not going to get these cases. Although the attorney for Janelle Grant also saying, "Hey, there people are flooding their inbox saying, hey." I'd like to be in on this too. This might turn into a class action, is what this might turn into, which would be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, and if you know there is fire underneath that smoke, and I just like most of the stuff in the filing, my gut just says as I'm reading that filing, they've got the goods on this.
Well, funny you should say that because. Not denying anything, old Johnny Ace, John Laurinaitis, has lawyered up. Vice reporting today, I'm going to read the statement. In a response to a follow-up question seeking to clarify that he was indeed saying that McMahon was the predator and that Laurinaitis, like Grant, was a victim. Yeah, those things are equal, Johnny, Jeff. Editorializing. Brennan wrote, quote, read the allegations, read the federal statute, power, control, employment, supervisory capacity, dictatorial sexual demands with repercussions if not met. Count how many times in the complaint Vince exerts control over both of them.
The opening line of his attorney saying, read the allegations, is very, very damning for McMahon. And it seems like Johnny Ace is just ready to, you know, throw anyone and everyone under the bus to try to save his own ass here.
He's turned states here. He is a rat. And the funny thing is, no matter how many people, when Vince did terrible things, said, oh, Vince, no, he's a great guy. Misunderstood, blah, blah, blah. Ain't nobody ever defended Johnny Ace. Nobody. Which would be an amazing thing. In his Hall of Fame speech, Abdullah the Butcher would say he wish he'd shot on Johnny Ace more. if Johnny Ace ends up being a hero in this in any way, F that. I'm sorry.
Well, no. Johnny Ace would not be a hero in any of this, Jeff.
No, I know. Hey,
let's be very clear.
He cannot be.
In part, going back to what his attorney said, look at the nature of these acts and the power, which is what they are saying is, oh, Johnny did it, but he was forced to.
I'm sorry. I have a vivid imagination, Chris. But
yeah. That is the crux of their defense right now.
The crux of their defense is Vince made Johnny have sex in a threesome with him and made Johnny look at those dirty pictures of his girlfriend.
Johnny was scared not to look
Johnny
at the
dirty
pictures.
Johnny was afraid to say no to having sex with an attractive woman. No, I'm sorry. I can't get over that hill. That's just like, you know, he did it, but he didn't enjoy it ever.
But for real, if you're McMahon's attorneys, you have to be gulping, listening to the opening salvo of Laurinaitis.
Because he didn't deny it. He didn't deny
The opening salvo of Laurinaitis' attorney is Johnny did it, but it's bad and he's sorry. It's a lot like that Aqua Teen Hunger Force episode where Master Shake dumps all of the oil and he has to go to tree court and Frylock's trying to defend him. And Frylock's like, what's that thing where he did it, but he's sorry? And then the tree judge is like, evisceration by 1,000 branches of a mighty oak.
That is the most on brand for Jeff, and yet arcane / weird reference I think we've ever had on this show. I just,
but that is the Laurinaitis defense. It's the Frylock defense.
And unless Vince literally had a gun to Johnny Ace's head while they were all naked, this is not an excuse that's gonna fly in court with a jury in a civil case. I'm sorry.
I want to make
now,
it
now,
real
hold on,
clear.
Now, hold on. Hold on.
Laurinaitis is
going to be liable, possibly, in this suit. If he offers criminal proof of some kind,
be real clear here for the audience. What we are laughing about is not the nature of the case, but the absurd nature
of this defense.
And the bizarre self-sabotaging nature of the opening salvo of Johnny Ace's defense. I don't know that it'd be better to go for abject denial, but it's unclear to me how this does him any good whatsoever.
Why is his lawyer saying a damn thing?
Right. I don't understand this strategy at all.
There's just baffling stuff amongst all these morons. Does WWE have a PR department? Because also later this week, if you watched that press scrum after the Royal Rumble, Triple H not having a good day and not having exactly the best public relations skills in the world dealing with this, got hammered for three of the first four questions were about this Vince thing. And boy, were these some lame answers he was giving.
Everything we can.
You know,
doing everything we can.
We don't want to take focus away from the performers right now, blah, blah, blah. You know, that kind of crap. And then HBK slightly doing better in terms of knowing that his responsibility is as a trainer to provide a safe environment for students at the performance center, blah, blah, blah. But then he gets hit with, oh, by the way, Brutus Beefcake's been talking about how you and Marty Jannetty used to date rape women type of thing. So he had to deal with that. This entire thing and the amount of mainstream media that is now on this Vince McMahon story, they may be lucky to survive this whole thing.
Yeah, I think in particular, I think if Levesque goes, Michaels is gone too. And Levesque's got serious problems in this story. Not that he was involved in what McMahon was doing, but that there are real issues, the Watergate sort of questions of what did Hunter know and when did he know it?
Yes.
And I think a damning part in that narrative is going to be the board vote that got changed, where they unanimously voted him off of the board. And then when
came back, yeah.
Yes.
And also, right. That
speaks to state of mind. I keep going back to that one where they, at that point, it's going to be very hard for them to argue that they didn't know something. I mean, they could skate away with it, but it beggars belief.
Well, it also
sure.
depends on which number of there are four unnamed executives in there. Which number is Triple H? That's going to be the big one for me. You know, is he the guy with the office next door? Is he, you know, there's enough for all of them to go around. I'm reading this paragraph. McMahon instructed Grant to create quote-unquote explicit content for Laurinaitis and arrange a threesome between them, after which Laurinaitis declined to answer when Grant asked if this was the first time this had happened. Later, the suit says she was transferred to the talent relations department, which Laurinaitis headed, a transfer that came, the suit says, quote, with the expectation for both McMahon and Laurinaitis that she engage with Laurinaitis sexually, both physically and with explicit content. This was bad enough that the Bella twins, or the former Bella twins, now the Garcia twins, came out and basically said, nope. and my mom's trying to deal with all this. Let them all burn if it's true, which it probably is.
Going back to the Johnny Ace defense, at this point, I believe that the filing is true. I know we have a system of law, blah, blah, blah. I've heard some other weenie takes this week on this sort of thing, but in light of the Laurinaitis defense, and especially my initial impressions of the filing anyways, I am going to be operating under the assumption that the filing is mostly true, with maybe certain details or whatever being off or whatever. But like, I'm going to be operating with it's mostly true until they show in court that it's not true.
I am of the opinion that this here's the troubling thing. Not the troubling thing, but something that's been in the back of my head. Vince can't let this get to discovery or trial. He can't. And the temptation for Grant to take what will probably be a vast sum of money. And I'm talking a large percentage possibly of Shane and Stephanie's inheritance.
Yeah. It would have to be a large settlement.
And if that happened, it would also, I guarantee you almost, Vince would also put in there that there will be no explicit admittance of wrongdoing and that the matter will be closed. And that is going to be, that is the kind of pressure I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy, because it's going to be, I think, a 9-figure type of payoff. It would have to be, I would think.
Yeah, no. I mean, at this point, I think that's, isn't that kind of close to what they're seeking in court anyways?
I don't know if they're seeking damage. I mean, how much in damages they're seeking. I did not see, I don't remember that part of the filing. If you have it in front of you.
I don't. I guess in my head, I thought they were, I thought I remember.
That, I don't think they were asked. I thought they left it open for both kinds of damages for a jury to decide. And then they'll give the net worth and whatnot and go, okay, what percentage should he have to pay? But boy, if I have FU money, I'm 70 something years old going on 80. Shane, Stephanie, nice knowing you. You don't get the second house. Okay. I'm giving a check and I have 6 zeros on there and maybe 2 others in front of it. And I go, how much do you want? And Vince McMahon's going to be the type of person to do that.
That'd be one more way for him to exert power.
Yeah,
like he would actually, like, you know, again, I just think the recurring theme in the filing And then now, of course, people have been doing a forensic pathologic analysis of Vince McMahon on screen a bit more here and seeing some of the same things that, you know, that have been, many of us have been seeing out there for a long time. And I think that Vince's, you know, humiliation, control fetish, all of that would very much get off on the idea of, yeah, in the very end, though, I was able to buy her off. Like I was ultimately able to clean up the mess. One other random bank shot thing that I had this week, a random thought around this story here, takes us back to the mid aughts as well, where we know Vince was doing a lot of this stuff. Like, we know what Vince was like around this vintage now. And you might remember a specific WrestleMania program involving Bobby Lashley and one Donald Trump, the host of television's The Apprentice at that time.
You're going to go down this route, you think? Okay.
It's an election. It's an election year. I'm not saying right now, is there any concrete anything? No. But like, dude, if Vince and Trump were hanging out at that time, and we know the behavior of these two guys, you know, I wouldn't bet against it if there were bets to be made. Now, will it come out?
Nah, it wouldn't come. It won't come out if it did. And I you know, I'd say it's even money.
Right, but it's not anything less than even money.
It's not anything less than even money. No,
that's what
not.
I keep coming back to. No, you like, you look at it, you're like, I wouldn't feel good.
There are others in that money circle that I mentioned that I go, oh, now I have to wonder. And I mean, even like Lance, right? Lance Storm wondering about the property manager who sent her to Vince.
I think that's, you know, last week I expressed some degree of sympathy just on the initial reading of it, but like, yeah, no, I have questions on that. And yeah, look, these people all operate in rings. You know what I mean? Like they, yes. You know, that's the other thing is they seek each other out. They have like a little community of this. It's not like I'm certainly not trying to get like into politics in particular, but I did just have like that kind of shower thought earlier this week. And I'm like, dude, they were in business together. Like how long? Like how long? Cause that the WrestleMania program, like didn't that kind of like wrap around for the better part of a year?
Yeah. But they also had like a 2-year deal with like Trump at
right.
in Atlantic City. When they did the WrestleManias there too.
So his and that's the other thing is his relationship with Trump extends further back than just that 2006 run too. It's just weird to think about. But in light of these allegations, it's something that I've now at least been kicking around in my brain a little bit. As just trash TV, I guess.
I have a lot of things I could say, and they're all terrible jokes, and they do not belong here because of the gravity of the situation, unfortunately. So my gallows humor will have to wait for another time.
But like even money.
CM Punk tore his tricep during the Royal Rumble on Saturday. Looks to be missing WrestleMania. That's all I got for that story until we get to the Lazy River and I'll talk about the segment. But yeah, I mean, this guy just has the worst luck. First big match and out for a extended period. And kind of similar to what happened with him in AEW in a way after he won the title. Yeah,
it cracks me up because when he was being introduced during the Rumble, one of the announcers, I can't remember if it was Cole, I think it was McAfee, was talking about his physique, and I was just like, really, if we're going to try to go with CM Punk, the body guy? Okay, sure, why not?
Got an interesting discussion in one of the Discords that I'm in with people who are in wrestling media about whether or not performance-enhancing drugs count as straight edge or not. Let's put it this way. There's a certain sect of straight edge that thinks that there are some things that are still okay to take. It was just one of those things that you kind of go, because it's the type of injuries that are like that. And it's like,
yeah,
I don't see Punk as that kind of guy, to be honest with you. I do think he takes it seriously, but man, if it came out like, oh yeah, no, I was taking an anabolic steroid or something like that. I mean, would that just kill his entire straight edge aura? And just everything he was saying was a lie the whole time. It's just one of those weird things where if it ever came out, it's a hypothetical. I'm not implying anything. I don't know anything.
I mean, yes, but he's also so gifted on the mic that he yes. could then turn that into a great heel run. Where
yes,
it's like,
he could.
Yeah. That
I say
actually,
put him on commentary. Don't make him go away. Just, you know, send him to NXT and let him put over the young kids or something instead of Booker T, who is dreadful. But, speaking of which, your commentary team for SmackDown, Corey Graves on play-by-play and Wade Bennett on color. Okay. Why are we not elevating Vic? Because he was on Raw once before? I don't get it at all. Wade
yeah.
Barrett. Well, not Bennett. Barrett.
Yeah, Stu Bennett. Stu Bennett is what he does. He goes by now.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. And... Graves and Bennett have some decent chemistry, and Graves can do the kind of play-by-play straight man thing. Like, it's all right.
And Pat McAfee's back on Raw, and I like Pat, but boy, he wasn't watching the product at all, and he is overextended right now and a bit overexposed, to be honest with you.
Yes. Yes. On both fronts.
Yeah. I mean, he was dreadful on the Rumble. I hate to say that because I like him. I mean, his excitement is great, but I'll give you a reference here. Do you remember the short love affair WWF had with Art Donovan, the ex Indianapolis Colts lineman who Dave Letterman loved bringing on, and he was kind of like a little bit weird.
Yeah, I kind of remember this.
He was doing a lot of the same lines as Art Donovan, like, how big is that guy? How much does he weigh? Kind of a thing. And I'm just like, dude, you're lucky you have goodwill right now because you are stinking up the joint. Oh, over in AEW land, Dynamite, 818,000 viewers for Dynamite on TBS. Lowest audience total the show has done since January 10th. I don't know if that's really, I don't think that's a thing, Dave, but okay. It's the lowest they've done
in
2 weeks.
Deep analysis there.
Dynamite,
you know, it's a number that really gives us context, right?
Dynamite drew a 0.26 rating in the demo, 18 to 49. Meanwhile, Collision, 300,000, 0.06 up against the Rumble. Again, and this will lead into the Lazy River. We'll get into the Rumble and stuff first, but dude, they barely drew 2,000 in New Orleans with Chris Jericho, Jeff Hardy, John Moxley, Adam Page, and Swerve Strickland. So you had your member berries nostalgia acts that you could see. You had your current stars that they're hyping and Samoa Joe and your future. And it couldn't draw 2,000 in a major metropolitan area. I am gobsmacked. I'll have a lot more to say about Dynamite during the actual Lazy River, but anything quick or anything you want to wrap up out of any of those things I just said?
I mean, I think it's the attendance numbers that are particularly scary for AEW. It when you're looking at the downward trend in viewership, okay, 818. They've done worse, but you know, the expectations for Dynamite to me have always been, this is a show that in order to be like a upper echelon company, right? Like not like a straight up competitor to WWE, but like the true alternative. The benchmark to me has always been 1 million. Dynamite should be able to get 1 million. And to me, something's off with the sauce if you can't get 1 million.
I don't want to be these darn kids, but I also think the fact that these aren't crowds that are loud and rowdy and big because they're choosing not to pay to go to these things and instead maybe watching TV or whatever. I mean, I agree with you. I think 1 million is the benchmark.
Yeah, and then, you know, you have to, you kind of cross-reference that against attendance. Like, look, they're going to all these towns, and they're, you know, getting 10,000 or whatever on a regular basis. And you know, and they were, you know, averaging 800, 900,000. I'm way less worried about it. It's the fact that they are running major metros. I guess we'll see how they do in Phoenix when they go out there. But they're running these major metros, and they kind of, you know, feel like a house in search of a show rather than a show in search of a house.
Yes.
That I think is a problem.
So that'll do it for the news part. Now into the lazy river of wrestling criticism. We have a lot to get through. Whatever we watched, whatever we saw, Chris is going to be mostly WWE. I did watch some AEW, but we have ice cold takes and a preview. So ice cold takes on the Royal Rumble. Usually WWE's best pay-per-view. I still was entertained by it, but boy, did I find it very mid. I found it meh. The Rumbles are story matches. I get it. But boy, I watched the 88 Rumble leading up to this, and I prefer big guys punching, kicking, and trying to throw guys over as the aesthetic in terms of the picture instead of everybody laying on the ground while guys do high spots. But that's just me. I want more of a battle royal kind of a thing where it's like I want to see them trying. I know battle royals are boring. I get that. I thought Jordynne Grace looked very good as a guest star for TNA, but can she not eliminate Maxxine Dupri, who is dreadful? And does Maxxine Dupri need to be made superior because she's a WWE talent? No, give Jordynne Grace an elimination. She got no eliminations. She did get some good spots in. I thought it was very good. I thought they introduced Jade Cargill very well. She got the big spot eliminating Nia with the body slam. I did laugh at R-Truth getting a hot tag in a Royal Rumble. He's so fantastic at being so unrepentantly stupid. And I actually thought the two other matches, while not great, like I thought the DQ on Kevin Owens was smartly done.
Yeah.
I did. And it made me mad that they didn't do a DQ on Dynamite in the Kyle Fletcher versus Chris Jericho match, since it was all to set up a match for Takeshita versus Jericho on the Phoenix show. AEW doesn't like doing disqualifications. You know, the other company doesn't. WWE doesn't do DQs all that much. Now, what both companies do in spades is the stupid distraction stuff with managers and seconds and thirds and crap like that on their weekly television from week to week. But a good DQ can be the end of a good story and can make everybody look good. And this especially made the referee look good, in which case they usually just make them look like idiots. I really liked that ending to that match. But your thoughts on Rumble, Chris?
It's weird. You look at the card and, I mean, I liked the ending to Logan Paul and Kevin Owens. You know, relatively brief match coming in at Wikipedia is at 14 minutes, but I think like that's with entrances, and I think the actual match was like closer to 12.
Yes.
And the four-way, which I guess we can talk about next, was sports entertaining, but such a foregone conclusion. And I feel like the job of a match like that is to make the three guys who are obviously losing seem awesome.
Yes.
And I didn't come out of that match thinking AJ was awesome or LA Knight was awesome or Randy was awesome. And that really should have been the message. I think being non-committal on who, quote unquote, should have won the title in that match was a bit, I get that we're on the road to WrestleMania, but you plant a seed, you leave a story unfinished, and then crazy idea, you finish the story. In this case, I don't know, make a decision. Is it Randy Orton who basically had Roman Reigns pinned? Was it LA Knight who once again had Roman Reigns knocking on the door but couldn't, you know, couldn't quite pull it out. Like, there should have been a more clear second place finish in that match as well.
I'm just tired of people not planning for friggin' Solo Sikoa. You know, we've had how many of these title defenses and how many days of the Tribal Chief's reign, and nobody ever has a contingency plan for when Solo Sikoa is going to come down and drag the referee out during a three count.
And in this case, an easy out is each one of these guys has a buddy. So, like, you actually have three guys come out and just annihilate Solo Sikoa.
Yes.
That makes Solo, yeah, it makes Solo look good. But, like, yeah, LA Knight has a friend. Randy has a friend. AJ Styles have a friend. But basically, they have something to counteract this.
And they've done nothing with Solo since the actual breakup of this entire Bloodline crew. You know, as he's just there doing the same thumb shtick, you know, being Roman's enforcer, whereas he was kind of an interesting character during the Usos tension with Roman.
Yeah.
I find him an uninteresting character. I mean, I'd love to go back to the Rhea Solo stare down, because that was at least interesting, too. Yeah, overall, you know, it was a good, I mean, it didn't. There's nothing amazing about anything in this Rumble. That's the thing. Other than maybe Jade Cargill lifting up Nia like she's nothing. And that was impressive. But hey, congrats. Aunt Pam winning a Royal Rumble. Very happy for her. Follow-up did very little. But we'll see what happens tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then Cody. You
know, Cody Rhodes, it's the right move. It would have been silly for them to have Punk beat Cody here. I think, you know, last episode we talked about maybe The Rock being on the episode or being on the show, and once that was clear that that wasn't happening, who'd they even have come out at 30? I forget.
It was Sami Zayn.
Yeah, once it was like Sami Zayn at 30, you're like, okay, well, he's not winning the Rumble.
Now I will say, on the men's side, they did a much better job with the promos on Raw, because man, that Drew and Punk one, that was my jam. when Drew pulls out, because they give him the what treatment, which is just stupid, because this is a really great segment. And when Drew goes, you know, I'm not a spiritual man, but you know, because Punk, I mean, Punk I played this crowd like a fiddle with the whole cancer friend thing. And really, and you know, my dream, and you know, screw that. You guys are the real winners here. I mean, it was a masterful performance by Punk. And then Drew comes out, seemingly touched by Punk's statement, and goes, I prayed for this. I went, oh, that's such a great line. That's such a great effing line right there. Go ahead, Chris.
No, I Drew McIntyre's doing some of the best character work of his life. And yeah, that
not
line.
Not just his life, but in, I mean, I think the last time, I mean, the Sami Zayn Bloodline stuff was great, don't get me wrong, but I mean, this was just another level of heel promo, and I'm going to live your dream at WrestleMania. Oh, that's so good and evil. I loved it. I loved this entire segment between those two.
The other opportunity to miss, though, I think during this Rumble, which I agree, mid to upper mid would be my kind of like, it was entertaining.
It's a story match. Both Rumbles are story matches.
Yeah. And like the show was kind of like, you know, easy to digest or whatever. It's not a meal I'd have twice, but like, you know, it was entertaining. So I'll say, you know, mid to upper mid. But, you know, Sami Zayn, if this company had a little bit more narrative discipline, especially with him coming in at 30, it would be real interesting to have told the story with him being a dark horse and saying like he has his own story to finish with Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
But like Cody is so obsessed that he's got this story, but Sami Zayn predates Cody's story. And, you know, like I think there was a much better opportunity to make this like a showdown between like Cody, Punk, and Sami, all three of whom legitimately have stories that they want to finish.
Well, it's like, interesting you say that, because I think it also leads into the problem that they had with this Cody Seth promo, which I also thought was really, really good. But Seth is talking about Roman's title as the political title, as, you know, it's one of those things where if Seth had creative freedom, and if we could have sat down there and talked about this, Seth should have looked at Cody and said, you want to fight me because you'll be fighting a guy who wants to fight you for a title, instead of the guy who always cheats, instead of the guy who always looks for the cheap way out, instead of the coward that Roman Reigns is. But you can't call him a coward, because then everybody gets a little bit nervous about his legacy and stuff like that. But really, Seth Rollins needs to call Roman Reigns a coward to try and lure Cody and really fire at home that Cody wants to pick a guy that he wants to have a knockdown, drag out battle of wills with, as opposed to this other guy who's going to be bringing Paul Heyman and Solo with him. It was just something that rang hollow to me the whole time, because, and even though, look, Cody sold it well, because Cody chose the scenery, like unlike any other superstar in WWE right now. But Seth needs to be more manipulative here, and he's not allowed to because he can't go after Roman.
Yeah. And there's also this question, and I think, you know, it's like, what is Seth's end game here? Like, why would Seth want this? You know?
Why would he want Cody?
Yes. Why would he want Cody to pick him?
I think it's probably because he's trying to elevate that title.
Yeah. No, I get.
I'm trying to think of a kayfabe reason.
Right. I'm trying to think of a kayfabe reason. Exactly. Like,
that Seth can be in the main event of WrestleMania.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's it. Like you know, that we need to kind of get that. Or
yeah, we do.
I think more interesting angle is you start getting clear friction between Roman and Seth. That's not paid off until we get to the other side of Mania. But like Seth basically sort of makes it clear that like he wants a title shot.
Meanwhile, we do have a premium live event this weekend. The NXT brand doing Vengeance Day on February 4th in Clarksville, Tennessee, continuing their run of kind of B cities outside of major metropolitan areas. The last PLE, as you might recall, was in Bakersfield, California, a lively and raucous crowd there. I assume Clarksville, Tennessee is going to be the same right now, a six-match card. Chris, we'll pick the winners, we'll preview, and then we can do anything that's lingering on NXT and our thoughts on the Lazy River before I hit AEW a little bit hard with, even though you didn't watch it, I'm going to give you a statement, and I'm going to let you marinate in it a bit. But anyways, the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic Finals. The Wolf Dogs of Baron Corbin and Braun Breaker versus the Trick Mello Gang of Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams. Before we get into the match, little shout out to Legado del Fantasmo. My God, they look like that awesome team in the territories that would come in and just light the territory on fire with some of their moves in that match against Trick Mello. Loved them. I assume this is going to be the Wolf Dogs winning this when Hayes and Williams can't communicate or something like that. It's going to lead to the split up, I would think. But maybe Hayes and Williams pull this out, but they're all kind of giving each other the side eye. What do you think?
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Chris?
No, I'm thinking. I think Hayes and Mello win, and okay, that escalates tensions. I think
tension's not going to break until they have the tag team title match. You're right.
I think they win this, and then like they lose the title match. I think what ends up happening is it's got to be that Mello attacked Trick here. I think Mello's been lying, like that they've blocked this out so many times earlier. It it's been very clear that like Melo attacked Trick, not Ilya, but and Ilya's just messing with him at this point.
In a very sneaky match that might be good, Dijak versus Joe Gacy in a no disqualification match. Now, I hate Joe Gacy's character work right now. It's just annoying to me at this point. But in the ring, he's still very good to me. And Dijak's game for anything. I have Dijak winning this. What do you have?
Yeah, I'm not crazy about Shtick Foley, but...
Shtick Foley?
Yeah, but I think this match has potential. I think Dijak ends up winning it, though.
Since we're also doing Lazy River NXT, let me mention that Chase U segment with Tell Me a Lie, which is the old Shawn Michaels lost his smile when they did the video package, but they did it for Chase U this time. And then for JC Jane to come up with a fix straight out of a Cinemax at 1:30 in the morning movie. Those calendars are going to be on sale in Tennessee. I just, the utter stupidity and ridiculousness of Chase U. God, I adore them. Chris.
I liked when the girls of Chase U came out, and it was the most non-committal half-acid attempt to like be posy and sexy. Like,
but at the same time, keeping respectful of the news of the week, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, hey, anybody ever see Bikini Car Wash when they were a kid? Okay.
Yeah, they're all coming out there and they're like, clap, clap, thumbs up. And it, I'm like...
Nothing sexual or anything like that because, hey, this is the week that Vince McMahon to go. Yeah, they play it absolutely PG.
And to be clear, I appreciate the thought put into that.
Yes.
But the actual subsequent art resulted in this uncanny valley thing where these people are coming out and acting in a way that's incongruous.
Oh, it was awkward.
With the actual skit. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. The family of Tony D'Angelo, Channing, Stax Lorenzo, and Adriana Rizzo versus Out the Mud, Lucian Price, Bronco Nima, and Jada Parker with Scripps. I think Out the Mud gets this.
My man Scripps is just killing it on the promos right now, right, Jeff?
Yeah.
Yeah, just killing it. You know, each week it's a little bit stronger. I just, this guy really feels like he's from the streets. And.
No. It's like it started out good and now it's just getting into try hard territory.
These promos, they remind me of
Chris. You sound more from the streets than Scripps does at times.
If I had a friend who was from the streets, I'd want him to sound like Scripps.
That's such a McMahon move, though, where it's like, the racial epithet term he used to Eddie Guerrero when you have to blanket up a bit. Yeah, that's what it feels like to me. It feels like there's a lot of Vince still in this product on a lot of levels, to be honest with you.
This type of faction feels really dated.
It feels derivative as hell, too.
Yeah, derivative, dated. And I think that's honestly one of the most sort of damning indictments with this we're from the streets sort of thing. The idea of being from the streets is sort of... at its, you know, best or whatever, you're unrelentingly authentic, but also in touch with what is going on right now. So the death of any of these from the street sort of gimmicks is when you, like, you know, you come in
60-year-old like, white guy shouldn't be booking guys from the streets unless they have a lot of input on the gimmick,
right? I dress up in like a wife beater and start calling myself Johnny Knuckles or something like that.
Oh, like the family.
Well, you know, also a really dated and crap gimmick. I mean, and the thing with D'Angelo is he's such a strong performer at the gimmick that I get the impulse to keep him with it. But if you don't have any material that's worth a damn, then there's no point in keeping him doing this. Like, the dynamic between him and Stax Lorenzo is just completely flat. Adrian Rizzo adds nothing.
Yes.
They try to put her over as like, well, she's the one who fixes the problems, but like, what problem has she fixed? Like, you know, show me a situation where Rizzo fixes, you know, corrects a problem for real.
Yeah. Obafemi versus Dragon Lee for the North American Championship. Okay. Obafemi wins this, probably.
Obafemi wins this. Dragon Lee does all the work. It's short.
Yes, it's short. For the NXT Women's Championship, a very interesting clash of two characters that were formerly good and now I can't stand. Champion Lyra Valkyria defending against Roxanne Perez. Chris, I'm going to let you go first because I think I know what's going to happen here, but we'll see.
I think Lyra Valkyria turns heel during the course of this match. I thought it was Roxanne who was turning during the course of this match, but I think it's Lyra Valkyria that, like, she finally accepts Tatum Paxley's help and like Tatum Paxley's friendship and turns to the dark side and becomes a heel champion.
I'm going the opposite way. I think Lyra Valkyria stops Tatum from cheating and then Roxanne Perez cheats Lyra out of the belt.
Interesting.
She's been cutting these promos again that are just out of character for what I want to see out of the Roxanne Perez thing. Oh, and by the way, that was a useless Rumble spot. Putting in Roxanne Perez in there to do nothing. That was great. I did not understand that at all. I mean, the two NXT people they had in the Women's Rumble were her and Tiffany Stratton. Tiffany Stratton looked like $1 million. Roxanne Perez went in there and did a move. Why not put in Lyra Valkyria to expose the NXT Women's Champion to people?
Then have Roxanne be upset that she wasn't in the Rumble, yes, rather than have Roxanne go in the Rumble and look like a clown and have to cruise into this title match.
Yeah, and now she's kind of giving heelish promos on NXT. I'm just, do not, she's going to become Cora Jade is what she's going to become. That's going to be the irony of the day, is Roxanne becomes Cora Jade in this match because Cora's going to be out for 9 months or whatever.
Yeah, that does increase the likelihood of a Roxanne heel turn. But I do think this match is a heel turn. I had Lyra like,
this is going to be an overbooked match, in my opinion, is what it's going to be.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think Roxanne's already been champion, and they tend to like not love to rush
back. And it feels like they don't want to pull the trigger on bringing her up to the main roster because I think they think she's small or nobody knows how to book a decent baby face in this company because good people are stupid. For some reason, I don't understand it, but I guess we're going to have to get it. And then for the NXT title, Ilya Dragunov versus Trick Williams.
I adore Ilya Dragunov's character work.
Yes.
He's become such a good promo, too. In addition to being such a good in-ring talent, he's now a very interesting... He knows how to play... You can't quite trust me.
Right.
So perfectly in his second language. He hits the tone just right. He knows how to have the mannerisms and everything that just evoke unease. And he's probably telling the truth, but he's doing it all in like a way that you're never quite sure what's true, what's not true. I love him. He's moving up the ladder every week. One of my favorite champions ever.
I was absolutely gobsmacked because I was having a conversation with Alex Pawlowski over at Fightful, my friend. And it was a little bit of a discussion about because it looks like they may be doing Bron Breakker against Gunther. And they may have Bron Breakker break the streak. And I was like, I think there's no question it should be Ilya going up there and beating Gunther. And he goes, well, we've already seen that in NXT UK and NXT. I'm like, yeah, it's a great story. Let the biggest audience that WWE has see how awesome it is. because they're never going to play clips of Ilya and Gunther on main roster television. They still
NXT
kinda...
UK might as well have not existed.
Yeah.
It barely, though, in the kayfabe universe of WWE, it exists only loosely.
Yeah, and I think Ilya is the guy to that should beat him, and then maybe you have Braun beat Ilya. But I just couldn't understand that. It just boggled my mind. Okay, AEW. Chris, my co-host on the Dynamite show, Paul Fontaine, deconstructed AEW Dynamite to the point where, for another animated show, if you recall the South Park episode where they deconstructed how Family Guy writes a gag with the manatees, did you ever see that?
Yeah, I did. It was brutal. It made it very hard to watch Family Guy episodes for a long time. Yeah.
Yes. It's going to be very hard for me to watch AEW the same way again, because here it is. You have a match. The guy who's losing the match takes 80% of it. And the guy who's in the actual feud that's going to be on the pay-per-view wins, but he only wins after getting beat for 80% of the match. And nobody ends up looking good for it. This company doesn't do straight-ahead squashes at all. They always think they're going to make the other guy look good by getting all this offense in, but all it does is it just elongates the freaking match. Why does Wardlow have to go 50-50 with Commander, who absolutely slaughtered Wardlow on that top rope move, and his knee drove right into Wardlow's throat? Commander has no upward mobility in terms of what he can be right now. Why can't Wardlow kill that guy? You know, it's just one of these things. It's every match, like all of Brian Keith's matches, all of Trent Beretta's matches, all of Action Andretti's matches. They're all those, I'm going to take 80% of this match and then I'm going to lose. And it's just...
Especially with Wardlow, you really feel it, where it's like, what is Trent Beretta doing getting this offense in this match? Wardlow should be on a strong push, which is actually should be his catchphrase. Like that should be on the t-shirt after all of these years. But once again, we are pushing Wardlow. This is actually the worst push of him yet.
Yes.
Because at least in the earlier pushes, he was doing lots of jobber guy matches and sometimes multiple jobber guys. And now he is getting squarely in the mid-card guys, but having competitive matches in which he ultimately prevails. And yes, his final 20% feels like he's gone on special and he's annihilating the opponent and really making a statement, having, you know, like, but it also feels like, you know, to use the wrestling video game analogy, you were kicking your friend's ass for most of the match, and then they got lucky and randomly got on special and then hit you with like the razor's edge four times in a row.
Yeah, they reversed the move real quick and then they built up their thing and hit you with the finish.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like your friend beat you real, real soundly there. It's just that like once your friend kind of fluked that moment, that like then they got gratuitous and made sure to hit their special on you three times before they pinned you.
The video game thing is apt, because I'm also just, and this is true for both companies, but in WWE I don't expect it, but in AEW it's apparent. These matches are emotionless. There's no heat to them. It doesn't feel like they're trying to fight each other. It feels like a video game in so many ways, and I'm tired of these heatless slogs of matches where we're just doing moves until we get to the pin, the finishing sequence, or somebody kicks out of a finisher, and then we get the pin. It's make wrestling real again in terms of, let's pretend it's real and pretend that these are guys fighting, because the two best things in wrestling for me this week were the two beatdowns, one on Raw, one on Dynamite. Dynamite, a bunch of CMLL guys came in and beat the crap out of Moxley with kicks and stomps and things like that, and the Judgment Day beating up R-Truth was a fantastic beatdown. I don't want to see RKOs out of nowhere and stuff like that. I want to see gangs of dudes try and physically hurt a person and put them out of wrestling type of a thing in kayfabe, so to speak. I'm just, nobody hates each other. It's except for Adam, except for Hangman Page, who has lost two matches to Swerve already. And for some reason, Swerve goes, okay, I'll give you a third. When there's no real reason to, other than we need it for the narrative completion. I mean, we should have thought of something that Hangman could do to really get under Swerve's skin to then give him the third match, but there wasn't any of that. We had another Deonna Purrazzo match, Chris, with Tony Storm on commentary. Can you imagine where all the focus was on during this match between Deonna Purrazzo and Taya Valkyria? I'll give you a clue. Was it on Stu?
Oh, okay. I mean, I was going to say that I thought that in particular, as of late, Taz has done a fantastic job balancing humor and focus and attention in the ring.
I'll tell you something, though. The opening match, it was Moxley and Jeff Hardy. Which, again, for some reason, Jeff Hardy is getting another high-profile match on Dynamite for the third week in a row. There was no jokes. They were playing it straight, and it's like it was almost like there was a dictate from the head office. Hey, call this, and it was fantastic. Taz was calling, you know, psychology and why you use moves and things like that. Excalibur and Tony were calling the action. It was a pleasant experience to watch the match. And then as soon as that match is over, it's time for Yuck Yuck Town again. And Joke Box Jones over here doing his thing. And look, I like Tony. Go ahead.
A little bit of levity during the show is fine and would be welcome. But it gets to the point where Taz is more focused on his next punchline than the next clothesline. That's good. That's solid. No. That's solid shit. Don't even act like that. I don't want to hear it.
Well, okay, we finally have Tony's gimmick now. She's still doing the silent movie thing, or the early Hollywood star thing. But she's now one of those stars who's trying to get around. I forget the name of the code that they were using in the early days, where it's like, but it's nothing but sex jokes she's doing now while she's doing.
Oh, like the blue laws?
Yeah, the blue laws type of thing. She's trying to get around the blue laws, but she's, you know, saying things like knuckle deep and things like that. I mean, it's become apparent that this is nothing but an R or an X-rated gimmick that's trying to get around the blue laws. And it's funny, but she's not the one who needs to get over here. Deonna Purrazzo is. And again, we're just eating Deonna alive to go with, Tony Storm thinks Tony Schiavone is Ian Riccoboni again, or whatever. It's like, leave her in the back and let Tony get some shine here and build her up so we can see this match again. But hey,
you mean Deonna?
Or Deonna. Yeah, no, we did get to see, wow, they have matching ducks on their ankles because they're sisterhood. It's like Deonna's doing nothing except doing the I want my friend back shtick. And it's god awful.
The I want my friend back shtick is just very tone off.
It makes you look like a wuss, is what it does.
It makes you look like a wuss, but like it makes, in particular, when your friend is this far gone, it makes you look crazy too. I've been in this situation where you want a person back, a friend back, or whatever. There's one I knew back in Texas, and he was so far gone, at a certain point that if I had, stayed in the picture or whatever, and I wanted my friend back, it would make me look crazy. And that's kind of where Deonna Purrazzo is. It's like your friend now has gotten so off the, kind of gotten so loony here that she, thinks that everything that she does needs to be shot in black and white. What are you doing, Deonna?
And also during this match, they hyped a match for, I think it's Rampage or Collision. I can't remember which one of the two, but I'm going to give it to you verbatim. And then I want you to tell me who you think they're plugging here and who do you think is going to win the match. Queen Aminata back in action facing Willow Nightingale.
Queen Aminata?
Well, yes, that's the whole thing is you're supposed to think, okay, great. No, they're going to have Willow Nightingale beat her because they're still doing this stupid thing with Stokely Hathaway and Chris Statlander. Unless Stokely is going off with Queen Aminata, it's just the wrong way to plug something to me. It's like, I love Queen Aminata. I think she's great. I wanted her signed badly, but... And then you go, and she's facing Willow Nightingale, who you've been giving a push to of late with all the... It's just...
I mean, it might be her turn to heel. Yeah, I don't know. But, I'm going to give them a little bit of the benefit of the doubt.
I was still mad that they didn't do the DQ on the Callis family. I had forgotten that they were setting up for a Takeshita versus Jericho match in Phoenix. And so they have Kyle Fletcher versus Chris Jericho, and it goes way too long. It's in the middle of the show. Chris Jericho wants to do a main event type of match. And Kyle Fletcher's getting all the offense. Once again, 80% of the offense is Kyle Fletcher in this match, and Chris Jericho is still hungover from his cruise or something because he's in slow motion. And instead, Chris Jericho just beats Kyle Fletcher. It's like, what? Your ROH TV champion, but not for the TV title, just clean and a non-title match. It was baffling. And even as baffling was the dealer's choice for selection. Now, Toa Leona, fine competitor. Again, probably doing too much as a monster going up against Hangman Page. But again, got 80% of the offense and loses. But then Hangman Page, who they tipped this off on Friday. You can pick anybody in the world you want to take on Swerve Strickland. Anybody. Anybody.
Mike Tyson.
To hit him or whatever. You pick Rob Van Dam. But it's a no DQ match, so I guess that makes it okay. You need to logically make these things make sense. Like, oh, Rob Van Dam came to me and begged me for, so I decided to use my one thing to give it to something. Give us some narrative clarity on these types of decisions and things like that. Much like, hey, when you have a legend enter the Royal Rumble, it's because, oh, WWE reached out to him, because otherwise it doesn't make sense that you're having surprises in the Royal Rumble. Which is why I liked this Royal Rumble more than most people who wanted more surprises. I'm like, no, it's logical not to have surprises in the Rumble unless you can think of a good reason why the front office would want that guy in the main event of WrestleMania. That's all I want is better storytelling and more heat. But hey, that's me. Sorry, I've ranted for a bit, Chris. Any thoughts on things you didn't watch?
No, I mean, I think we have more or less succinctly talked about the Dynamite formula at length. And, you know, that's the real problem with the weekly product is that 80-20 thing. It's just very unsatisfying. And I think that they feel the need to extend the formula, one, obviously, because wrestlers want to get their shit in. But yes. Two, if you reduced down the formula and you made them into 5 or 6 minute matches, you would really feel how glaringly dumb they are as a structure to do that 80-20, where like the losing wrestler takes 5 minutes of a 6 minute match and it's the final minute that the opposing wrestler takes. It's just not a satisfying structure.
What, you wouldn't want to watch Commander versus Adam Page, where Commander does all his flippy stuff and then it's like a buckshot lariat and that's it?
Yeah, right. It's just 5 minutes of Commander killing it. Missile drop kick after missile drop kick. All of a sudden he goes off the ropes, gets caught, and then, you know, that's it.
Anything else?
No, not this week.
Okay, cool.
I really like the dynamic between Trick and Ilya Dragunov. I said it before, but I'll say it again. I thought that promo between them was was really good. And even though to me it sort of feels like a foregone conclusion, I like the character work between Trick, Mello, and Ilya. They do a good job creating doubt.
I thought for sure that Trick Williams was going to be in the Royal Rumble, and that's why they put him on the Go Home SmackDown, and then Mello was going to eliminate him. I just did, and I was so wrong about that.
And I thought it was interesting storytelling just to add that both of them didn't know the other one what the other one was doing. Mm-hmm. That, like, they're really not on the same page here. It's a good story. It really, like, this has actually been a very interesting story. Are Mello's intentions pure in trying to win the Dusty Cup?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they've done a good job creating doubt. I think that kind of stuff is what solid programs are. And all three of them are really talented in-ring performers too. So, like, if this ultimately results in Mello versus Trick versus Ilya, that's a really interesting three-way match ultimately.
I would really like, because I think tomorrow on SmackDown is going to be the breakup of Damage Control, or at least throwing Bayley out. And I want to see how, I really would like it to be intense. Like the prototype for me, and I tweeted this earlier this week, was the Clash of Champions where the Horsemen throw Sting out. Kind of a thing for winning Future Shock and then wanting the world title shot against Ric Flair. And Ole's like, you're no longer a Horseman. You never were a Horseman, type of a thing. And I think Dakota Kai could get to that level with Bayley. I think that'd be kind of an awesome way to do it. And then they just beat her down and she just decides, all right, screw it, I'm going after EO. It's just the Monday follow-up was so, I thought that was weak sauce. I really did, with Nia beating up Rhea and all of Damage Control kind of cowering at it. But we'll see. You can follow me at Crap Game 13. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes on Elon Musk's X, formerly known as Twitter. Chris does not do that kind of childish stuff. He is instead on the Instagram at @DOCTOR_NOV. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network podcast for all of your wrestling criticism needs. You've seen the lineup. It's very, very good. I am also on Fight Game Media doing the Dynamite show live 20 minutes on 20 minutes after Dynamite ends on YouTube. And then the next day in your audio feeds, myself and Paul Fontaine thoroughly deconstruct all things AEW, especially that Wednesday show. Chris is shoveling snow and giving tours and giving guitar lessons. He's going to plug his stuff now.
Yeah, if you are in the market for snow or guitar lessons, I'm the guy. Also, if you are interested in watching me develop out and restore a Daisy Rock Mojo Jojo guitar, go and follow me.
Mojo Jojo.
Dude, I'm so excited. Like, when this thing's done, it's going to sound awesome, but just like to have a Mojo Jojo is very, very exciting. So follow me on Instagram if you want to see me restore a guitar and bring this thing up to extreme glory at @DOCTOR_NOV.
We'll see you next week.
Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.